Welcome to Newsworthy with Norisworthy. Get ready for some awesome.
Welcome back to the show, friends. Today we have a special emergency podcast with my good friend, Wade Hodges from Dallas, Texas. How you doing, Wade?
Excellent, Luke. It must be an emergency podcast because you didn't even have time to get properly dressed before you make me look at you through Skype.
Well, you know, this is just an audio recording, so I don't have to really get dressed up.
Let me let your audience in on the fact that right now you're wearing a tank top that I don't know if you slept in it or what, but it's quite the scene. You have this library of books behind you that make you look studious, and then you wear a tank top. And what I want to know is, because you have some fairly respectable guests on the show, and, and I know you like to do the interviews through Skype, and so they're looking at you and you're looking at them. Do you wear a tank top when interviewing all your guests or only for those you don't respect?
That don't respect. Just them.
All right. Good. So me and maybe Josh Graves.
You get that. Yeah. Usually I put a nice V-neck on and I'm ready to go.
Dressed to impress.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's some big news that happened yesterday, which
was huge news.
So our friend Tim Cook, standing in the massive shadow of one Steve Jobs, trying to put on this presentation for the new iPhone 6, which is what we all expect. It's what you inspected, right, from Apple?
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. iPhone 6.
That's all I thought it was about.
All we thought.
And maybe a watch. Maybe throwing a watch in as well, but I didn't care about the watch.
No one wanted to. The watch, no one really wants to watch.
No. I don't wear watches, haven't worn a watch in a couple of years. I don't intend to start.
Why would I? I've got an iPhone that tells me what time it is. That is my watch. They've already given me one. I don't need another one. Were you watching the actual unveiling?
No, I didn't watch it. In fact, I have never watched one. I love Apple products, own just about all of them that they offer, but I always wait and let someone else interpret for me what the presentations mean, because I don't have time to watch it or listen to it.
Oh, you're big time. You are very big time. Yep. And that's what I did as well. I was waiting to see what happened. My timeline blew up. Preachers everywhere were ecstatic because a free U2 album has been snuck in there. Like the predecessor of sneak albums herself, Beyonce Knowles, U2 slipped one in. We didn't even know they're going to give one away. They're giving it away for free. They just did that. Amazing.
And I totally missed it. I had meetings all morning, and then I was at lunch with somebody. And so I came into the office. I thought, okay, let me see what they're saying about the products, how the reviews are. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I see U2's new album. I'm like, what?
Free download.
Because we had been led to believe it's been 5 years since they released an album. They released a single earlier this year, but that was it. I wasn't sure we were ever going to see another U2 album.
You thought they were done?
I was afraid one of them was going to die before released another album. I was like, they kept putting it off and postponing it. And so it's not just that it's free. It's that, I guess maybe unless you're a super insider and had heard rumors, I don't know that most people had any idea that a new U2 album was going to be available yesterday.
And I figured you would be an insider since you actually have them published in a book, a collection of sermons on U2.
Yes, and strangely enough, I still didn't get a memo that a new album was going to be dropped.
That's sad.
Yesterday.
What was the name of the book?
You asked that. That's sad. I'm not sure. You're supposed to know the name of the book. Am I not a guest on the show?
No. Why?
It was over 10 years ago. Let me go over to Amazon. It is Get Up Off Your Knees, Preaching the U2 Catalog. That's the name of the book.
And didn't our friend Eugene Peterson do the foreword?
He did. He did. And I don't know if he's our friend, but he's definitely my friend, because in the foreword, when he was introducing this book, which is a collection of sermons that preachers have preached and included U2 lyrics. That's why that was the whole thing holding these sermons together. But in the foreword, he's talking about the spiritual influence of U2, and he says, some of my preaching friends, as you will read, some of my preaching friends have. And I'm like, he just referred to me as one of his friends. Yeah, so I'm one of his friends.
Well, that's pretty special.
Yep.
Okay, so I imagined last night the album has been magically put in everyone's iTunes account, and I'm imagining preachers across the world ecstatic. I'm imagining our friend Josh Graves at his home underneath his garage basketball goal, just working on his skyhook, listening to the album. Sean Palmer down in Central Texas doing his P90X Buns of Steel workout while jamming out to the new album. Jonathan Storm in West Texas sitting at his desk, his feet dangling, barely touching the ground, just tapping away on on his desk thinking how awesome the album is. Why do all these preachers love U2 so much?
I don't know, but it is an interesting phenomenon. And it has been 5 years since the last album, but I know every time a new U2 song is out or a new album, you can pretty much be guaranteed that for the next 2 or 3 days, your Twitter feed or stream and your Facebook wall are going to be peppered with quotes, little one-liners where preachers are pulling out spiritual lyrics from the new songs.
Mm-hmm.
And no commentary, just throwing them out. Here's something else Bono said that was spiritual, or something else that sounds religious. And we love to do that. Love to find the little spiritual nuggets in the songs. And
yeah, you did a whole, you got a sermon in a book on that. So you can't really throw stones on that.
We love to do it.
Why do you love to do it?
Well, for me, I've always been a fan of U2. I remember I was in the eighth grade and I was in my room. So Friday or Saturday night, I was playing Nerf basketball, mm-hmm. and a girl that I liked had just broken my heart.
Oh, no. Do you remember her name?
I do.
Would you say it?
I won't.
Tammy. But, can I call her Tammy?
But if she's listening to this podcast.
Tammy, you broke his heart.
Wow. I can't believe you're listening to this podcast. You're not nearly as cool as you thought you were in the eighth grade if you're listening to this podcast.
But, okay, so Tammy just broke up with you. What song are you listening to?
She broke up with me. I'm shooting Nerf hoop in my room, trying to make sense of my life, put together my broken heart, which, as Bono would say, a heart that is broken is a heart that is open. And on the radio, Z95, Corpus Christi, Texas, the guy says, here's the new song from U2, and it was With or Without You. And
are you singing that to Tammy?
No, Bono was singing that to me, just kind of comforting my soul. Mm-hmm. And opened what's the other lyric from the first song, that a song made sense of my world. That's exactly what happened back in 1987 when I first heard With or Without You.
Wow, that's and special.
That became the ultimate breakup anthem.
So you became a U2 fan. You bought in. You're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yep.
As a wee child, 87, Corpus Christi, Nerf basketball, Wade Hodges, loves U2.
Yep.
You grow up, become a preacher.
Yep.
And so you want to hold on to your love of U2, and so you start working them into yourself.
You know, I enjoyed U2 stuff, but I, growing up, certainly through college, I was oblivious to some of the more spiritual lyrics. Some of the songs, I didn't know anything that, you know, early on in their career, when they're much, much younger, they were a part of, I think, a Christian commune of some sort. At least three out of the four of them were. And I was oblivious to all that. I just liked their music.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until probably graduate school and studying theology, you start noticing, man, there are all these little resonances and references in U2 songs that sure make it sound like Bono has read his Bible.
Yeah.
And so you're wondering, like, is there some kind of Christian background here? And then over the years, you become more aware of, for sure, there's a Christian background here. And that's where he's writing from.
But isn't there some people, maybe not anymore, but there was a time when people were asking, is Bono really a Christian?
Yes.
Is he one of us? Is he not one of us?
Yep. About the time this book came out, which would have been, I think, 2002, early 2003, there was, at least in the evangelical community, a love-hate relationship, or at least an unsure relationship with Bono and U2, because again, the spiritual references in the songs were there. He had obviously read his Bible, but is he really a Christian?
Why were they asking that?
I think part of it was, on one hand, we wanted him to be a Christian,
mm-hmm.
and we loved the fact that he was saying such positive, good stuff in his songs, but then U2 would win an award on an award show, like the Grammys or something, and he would drop an F-bomb into the microphone on live TV.
Mm.
And you'd be like, so are you or are you not? Because everybody knows if you say the F-word on TV, you can't possibly be a Christian.
Yeah.
So there was, I think, at least at some point, we had a difficult time reconciling. This guy's a rock star who uses Christian language and imagery in his songs.
And the F word.
And the F word. How do we reconcile all of this?
Hmm.
And then I remember he did an interview, and I think I posted it on my blog because it was the first time I had seen in an article where he basically answered the question, yes, I'm a believer, I'm a Christian, I follow Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the definitive answer from him, yes, I'm a Christian. Now, he still didn't fit the stereotype of I'm a Christian in the evangelical religious sense of the word, but the guy is saying, I consider myself a Christ follower.
Yeah. Do you think part of the reason that Christians got over his propensity for dropping the F-bomb is because they just wanted to have a rock star that's one of their own? That there are a lot of people that get kicked out of the club for many things. The F-word would typically kick many people out, but do you think there is just like this really strong longing to have one of our own be on a big platform?
I think so. I think the standards have changed as well, because I remember 10, 12, 13 years ago, when more and more churches were using video projectors in their worship assemblies, it opened up the possibility that you could use video clips in your sermons. And a huge controversy was, can you use a video clip from a movie that had a bunch of cuss words in it? Even if your video clip didn't have cuss words,
if it were
a PG-13, I remember having to justify in one of my sermons, I'm using a video clip from a rated R movie. The clip is not rated R, but the deal was, yeah, but you're going to make people want to see the movie, and they're going to go home and rent the movie, watch the movie, and it's got this kind of language in it, it's got this violence, whatever.
Yeah.
So there was this super sensitivity to it.
Yeah, I had someone at my church one time get mad at me because I showed this clip from The Story of Us, which is a Bruce Willis, Michelle Pfeiffer movie. And like the end of the movie, it's like this beautiful, hey, we're going to make our marriage work. No one's perfect, but we're going to stick this out for the kids, and because it's the right thing to do and because we love each other. Beautiful clip. I probably show it like every 3 years still. I love the clip. Someone came up to me afterwards and said, well, I watched the movie because of you, and there's like 70 F words in there. And I said, well, they do tell you that on the cover. I mean, why do you think there's such a hang up about that?
I don't know. I do think the standards have changed, though. I don't think the same hang up is there. No, it still is going to it's going to be there for some families, and I think probably some churches are going to be more sensitive to it. But I just don't see the same angst from the larger Christian community about, oh, you watched this movie and it had this kind of language in it.
Yeah,
and I would still probably be sensitive about a video clip I would show on Sunday morning, but I wouldn't live in fear of like, oh, am I going to have to justify?
You know, it's funny. It's, we had Nadia on the podcast a while ago, and she has a proclivity for dropping a few F-bombs, among other words. And I didn't really get any feedback from I got one or two not so excited comments from people.
Yeah.
But for the most part, no one really said anything about it. And then I realized that I've got a nephew who follows me on Twitter, who I think he might listen to my podcast. I'm like, you know what? I feel like an old guy. I feel like the person saying, get off my yards, kids, because I'm concerned for the first time about language because of that.
Yeah. And are you going to have to go back into your iTunes settings and register this podcast
as
an explicit podcast because of the language some of your guests are using?
Yeah, I probably should have.
I guarantee if it was a video podcast and people could see you in that tank shirt, you'd sure have to rate it as explicit.
Yeah. Okay. So we love Bono. Christians love Bono. Preachers love to talk about him.
We talked about him, weren't we?
Yeah. Do you think we elevate him to having almost like this messianic rock star figure, almost to the point of like turning him into an idol? Like, Bono, we need you to be something for us.
I think we got to be careful with that. I think that's the tendency. I think we so desperately want to have a mainstream celebrity who is also living out and articulating a recognizable Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
We want that so badly. We can't help but overdue, perhaps.
Yeah.
Our infatuation with him and our enthusiasm for him. You remember the same thing was true of Mumford and Sons, that a lot of their lyrics have that same kind of spiritual echo, the echoes of mm-hmm. grace and Christianity. And I think I remember reading an interview with the main guy for
Mumford.
Them.
Mumford.
Yeah, Mumford. Is that
Mr. Mumford.
I didn't know if he was Mumford or not. It's
no,
like,
the rest of the band is his sons.
Okay, well, see, it's like for years I thought Darius Rucker was Hootie.
Yeah, he is.
And apparently he's not.
No, he is.
So, but anyway, in some interview he had said he used to be a Christian, but he really doesn't identify that way. And you're kind of like, okay, I understand what you're saying, but we're just desperate for mainstream celebrities who articulate a Christian faith in a way that inspires us and that we can get behind, and in a way that doesn't embarrass us. Because the thing that's true about Bono, the thing that's true about Mumford and Sons, is there's no cheese factor associated with that. And you know, U2 has been has been doing Christian-oriented, Christian-themed music for years, but they've never crossed over into that overdone, cheesy kind of thing that can happen sometimes when Christians are trying too hard.
Yeah, it goes back to what you're saying earlier. They clearly know their Bible.
Yeah.
And when Bono is writing a song, he's using the Bible in a way that doesn't come across as he's trying hard.
That's right. He doesn't have to pull over and park. And by the way, I'm going to quote some scripture in the chorus.
Yeah.
He's like, he reminds me in some ways of what Paul does in his letters, because Paul doesn't always pull over and say, hey, I'm going to throw in a reference from the Old Testament here. Sometimes mm-hmm. he does, but sometimes it's just an echo and an allusion. And you almost get the sense, did Paul even intentionally mean to do that? Or does he just know his Bible well enough that when he writes and is expressing his heart, those are the words and the images that just come out of it? And sometimes that's the way I feel about the stuff that Bono writes with his lyrics, is, okay, how intentional is he being? Or has this guy really read the Bible enough, especially the Psalms, that they're just a part of his vocabulary? Mm-hmm. And that's what he draws his art from.
Yeah. What was the time that I don't know if it was a live album or something, but he quotes Psalms and he specifically quotes The Message
yes.
as an intro to song.
Yeah, it was for the tour that they did associated All You Can't Leave Behind album. I was there. I saw that show in Vancouver, and on Good Friday, no less.
Really?
And when it's Good Friday, and U2 is singing "Wake Up, Dead Man" on Good Friday, it's pretty cool.
Wow.
But at the beginning, as an intro to "Where the Streets Have No Name," he's at the bottom of the heart, because the stage was shaped in a heart. And so he's at the bottom of the heart and he hits his knees and the lights are shining on them. Edge is starting to play the riff that lets you know, I know what song this is going to be. The crowd is starting to scream. And in the middle of this, Bono says, he starts chanting, "What can I give back to God? What can I give back to God for the blessings he's poured out on me? I'll lift high the cup of salvation, a toast to God." And then the song blows up and he starts to sing and run around the stage. Well, it sounded like this really cool intro, and most people didn't recognize it at the time. But then it was like, wait a second, that's Psalm 116. Somebody pointed out that's Psalm 116 from The Message. And so he's actually quoting scripture, quoting from the Psalms, using Peterson's Message translation or paraphrase mm-hmm. as the intro to what may be their most popular concert song, "Where the Streets Have No Name." And most people didn't even know he was doing it. But for him, he's praying at the beginning of that song.
Yeah.
In the middle of it, you're surrounded by a coliseum full of people.
Were you one of the people who, after that concert, said that this was the best worship experience you've ever had?
Yeah, it's probably, yeah.
You were that guy.
I would at least say that was one of the most unexpected worship experiences I'd ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Because you go, it's a rock concert, but at some point, especially I think if you are a Christian and you're paying attention to what's going on and you're watching him and he starts quoting scripture, you can find yourself caught up into it. Like, I think I started worshiping there about halfway through the concert.
And you didn't even know it.
Didn't even know it. Snuck up on me.
Hmm. Hey, did you see the letter that they put on their website as kind of an explanation for what they're doing?
No, I didn't see it.
Okay, so there's this line. He says, and since you haven't read it, I'll read it to you. He says about giving away for free. He says, because if no one's paying anything for it, we're not sure free music is really that free. It usually comes at a cost to the art form and the artist, which has big implications, not for us and you too, i.e. I'm worth $600 million.
Yeah.
But for future musicians and their music, all songs that have yet to be written by the talent of the future who need to make a living to write them. And so he just talked about how they actually got paid for the album by Apple. Like, so Apple bought the album, gave it, which is a nice gift for all of us Apple users.
Right.
And so he says, art is never really free, which remind me of Seth Godin, his stuff on art, where he talks about art. It's like this personal gift that changes the recipient. And it's never free. It always costs something. And I love that idea that Bono's talking about here, that when you are doing art, there's no such thing as free art because it always costs someone something.
Yeah.
Not just what you pay for it, but if you're going to create art, it always has to come at the expense of something. Probably your heart, your blood, sweat, and tears, your experience, your pride, whatever it is.
Was that a declarative statement or was there a question in there somewhere?
Well, I think it was a statement.
I agree then. Yes, I agree with Bono.
Yeah, you agree with Bono? No, you should agree with me on that.
Oh, I lost track of who was talking.
No, a lot of people kind of confuse me and Bono sometimes when we're talking. But
what's your response if you're a struggling artist and you need a contract, you need to sign, you need to sell albums to make a living, and arguably the most popular rock band in the world just gave away their albums to millions of people?
Yeah. Half a billion.
Does that change the way you feel? Is that encouraging, discouraging, or is it, well, nice for you, you can afford it, or is it a non-event?
I don't know. I mean, I would imagine, you know, the closest thing was, you know, you're trying to get a book published, and then you see, you know, Stephen King, I'm just going to give away my new book.
But I
don't think there's like a limited quality of art that's going to be consumed. And so I don't know how much it would really affect you. I think anytime you compare yourself to YouTube, you're always going to lose this.
It's like the old school thing, and I mean old school thing of patronage. So I'm going to have a patron, a benefactor, who I'm an artist, and this person's going to be a place to live, going to pay for my supplies, going to buy my food, allow me to live, and I then am going to produce art. And even if I can't sell my art to make enough money to live off of it, this person believes in my art enough that they've provided me the space from which to be an artist. And I mean, that's an old practice.
Yeah. Now YouTube's connection with Apple dates back to the first iPod that came out 10 years ago.
And so
this is kind of the, you know, circle back to that. Did you ever read the Steve Jobs biography that, I forgot his name.
Isaacson.
Yeah. Did you read that one?
Yeah.
And so obviously, if you know Steve Jobs, you know he's got this obsession with music, and Dylan was his guy. Dylan, right. I mean, he just loved him, you know, and he always used that language of, times are changing. And he liked seeing himself as being part of a revolution and changing the world. And that, I mean, which in a technological world, he definitely has changed it. You think he's trying to tie in with U2 and Bono, like that's his new, that was his Dylan?
That for Tim Cook?
No. For Jobs, when he first got U2 on board with them.
Yeah, I don't know. That's where I think when you start getting into the commercial and marketing side of it, is what is revolutionary, what is art, and then what is really just, hey, this is a smart PR move.
Yeah.
And it was, and certainly back then, when iTunes wasn't the ultimate place to go for your music, when Apple hadn't dominated the music industry and really changed the music industry, it seemed like it was more important. Apple needed U2 to validate what they were doing musically.
Yep.
Whereas, I don't know, yesterday, what was yesterday? Was yesterday U2 validating Apple, or was it a return of the favor and now Apple, after 5 years, you guys are getting older, people are wondering if you're ever going to have a radio hit again. Was this Apple validating U2?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, because Apple clearly is the big dog now. Right. 10 years ago, exactly. You know, you two had obviously had a lot of commercial success, especially back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be a nice return the favor at this point for you two.
Yeah. I just know this, after the announcements yesterday, I'll probably end up with an iPhone 6 at some point when it's time to get a new iPhone or whatever. But the only news that excited me yesterday was the free album.
Really?
That for me was the most memorable piece of news that came out of there. That's what I was most excited about yesterday afternoon.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know a new one was going to come out. I was actually in the Apple store on Monday, and they said, hey, wait to get a new one because the new ones are coming out, which shows how technologically...
You're that guy. Yeah. I just got a brand new iPhone 4.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty much that guy right there.
Nice. You're not as big a fan of U2 as... I'm not Josh Graves level fan, but...
I'm below you on that.
Yeah, you're sort of in it. But you're a little young to really appreciate them, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I got on the phone with AJ Levine last week, and she goes, oh, you're a lot younger than I was expecting. Thank you. Yes, I am young. No, I'm just not a music buff. That's not really my thing.
Right.
So right. I think it's the story about the Christian musician who's kind of the top of the world and how much we love for them to be up there. That's really... a compelling story for me, but yeah. You know, music now, that's not really my thing.
Yeah. Well, I think you asked a question a while ago about why we make such a big deal about Bono. And really, I think we do end up focusing it more on Bono than U2 because mm-hmm. he's the one who's more out and vocal about his faith. But, it's not like we Christians, it's not like we need any extra encouragement to turn people into celebrities and to put way too much attention on celebrities.
Yeah.
Christian celebrities. I mean, we do it with pastors and writers mm-hmm. and thought leaders. So when you actually have an already existing celebrity who's also a Christian, it's going to be natural, I think,
yeah.
to magnify that.
I had the children's minister of my first church out of seminary. One of my favorite people in the world. I mean, seriously, I absolutely loved her to death. And she was always very positive and encouraging. And one day she said this cryptic phrase to me, which really kind of made me stop for a second because it didn't seem to really fit her typical, you know, positive, encouraging, upbeat kind of persona. She told me, Luke, everyone will disappoint you.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's kind of a harsh way to look at things. But then, you know, she's 40 years down the world, or, you know, 40 years into life beyond me,
yeah.
she's experienced a few more things than me. And I think that's, you know, the disposition that it's probably a lot more healthy because yeah. I think if you look at Bono and say, you're never going to disappoint me, you're our guy, you're the personification of, you know, what Christianity is supposed to be, it's not going to work out too well for you.
Right. I think there's always that caution that yeah. whether it's the latest preacher, whoever wrote the best-selling book, or an artist, you know, whether they identify as Christian or not, I think we ought to be careful with putting too much emphasis or too much faith in their faith.
Yeah.
Was she right? Has everyone disappointed you, Luke?
Has everyone disappointed me? Not everyone. 85% of people, maybe. That's... No, I mean, but seriously, if you're connected to anyone for any sort of extended period of time, people yeah. disappoint you. I mean, that's yeah. the thing about people is you engage in a social contract in which you are connected to someone who is imperfect. Yeah. And that's kind of basic Christian theology.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we can admire, celebrate, affirm, enjoy, encourage someone who is enjoying popularity or celebrity and mm-hmm. is also identifying as a Christian. But doing so in such a way that this person is human and our faith. And I don't know, does it come to credibility that somehow we think Christianity has more credibility in our culture because somebody like Bono is a Christian?
Yeah, I think that speaks to just an inner insecurity that we have.
Yeah, yeah. And where, no, Christianity does not need celebrities to endorse it mm-hmm. in order to be a valid lifestyle and way to... something to order your life around.
Yeah,
but it sure is encouraging when you see something like that.
Well, you're, you know, as a father of boys who are old enough to notice who's on the radio and who's popular, it has to be helpful for you to be able to look up and say, hey guys, this is a follower of Jesus. It's cool. He can do it, so you can do it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I have worked really hard to help my boys appreciate and turn them towards U2 in their music, their old stuff. But also, first thing I did with my youngest son this morning, I said, I downloaded the album, put it on his phone so that he can start listening to it. And I said, I want you to listen to this album a couple of times and tell me, report back to me what your favorite song is. Because I want him to know this music. I want to have something in common with him. And if I can get him hooked on that kind of music early on, I would much rather he be listening to that than some other options out there.
Hmm. Yeah, my daughters are very excited to listen to Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah.
My oldest son has... He's a huge Toby Keith fan.
Oh, so. My. That's, how did that happen? Is that your wife's fault?
No, he's a country kind of guy. He also listens to classic country, too, so that's not all bad. He likes Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson. It's actually, I'm very, very happy to report that when we go on road trips and either one of my sons puts their playlists on the radio, plugging in, that it's something I can listen to. My oldest, especially, a lot of times it's classic country. Listen to Waylon and Willie and Merle Haggard and Johnny Cash, George Strait, and then a little bit of Toby Keith, maybe.
That's not bad. I would live with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they throw in an occasional U2 song just to see if I'll perk up.
And do you?
Of course.
Yeah. Well, I hope you perked up very much yesterday when you got the free album.
I did.
Yep.
I did. I'm getting ready to spend the afternoon listening to it and pulling out all the quotes that I think are profound, and I want to post them on Twitter.
Outstanding. I'll look forward to seeing those.
Thanks for checking out Newsworthy with Norsworthy. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You are now adjourned.